morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to a brand new episode of Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. On this happy Royal Rumble Day.
Happy Royal Rumble. I like that. That should be a holiday. I know my friend, Eric Barnes, so I think he used to be on the Wrestling Observer message board as Nesbar. He used to tell people on WrestleMania Day, he's like, oh, happy Wrestling Day, everyone. But just like all holidays, you know, there's the big holidays, WrestleMania, I guess that'd be whatever. But yeah, this is, I guess what you would say, this is the B holiday. This is sort of, it's not the number one show, but I'd say this is arguably number two. Dazza, what would you consider this show? Is it number two or number three behind SummerSlam?
Oh, I definitely think this is number two.
No, okay.
Number two, because people, I think because it's like, you know, so SummerSlam's, you know, a great sort of card for wrestling, but Royal Rumble's that thing where even people who are kind of lapsed wrestling fans, they'll still take interest in the Royal Rumble and still want to see the Royal Rumble because it's basically like a one-year thing. It's quite unique. It's also a fun hour where you get to see all the wrestlers and, you know, people can basically sort of watch that and you get, like, surprises and stuff like that. And also, it's basically, it's even though some are good and some are bad, it's basically, you know, just a really, really fun concept. And you don't have to sort of, like, you know, be super into wrestling or sort of understand about, you know, what makes a great match or anything. It's just like, it's just a fun, like, you know, demolition derby of a match.
Yes, in fact, that's what we're here to do today. We're here to count down our top 10 memories or, you know, experiences for the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble moments, as you would be. This is not limited to just events or moments or matches in the Rumble itself. I've talked to Dazza. He says we're going to expand it to where it's going to be any, it could be just maybe a match that's not necessarily pertaining to the Rumble itself. It's going to be whatever match or event or moment that happened in the history of the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
All right. Let's waste no more time. Let's go into our top 10. Dazza, what is your number 10 moment?
Okay, my number 10 moment is from the 1989 Royal Rumble, and it's basically right at the start. To me, it's kind of pretty much the first thing that actually ever happened in the Royal Rumble proper, and that is the confrontation between Demolition Axe and Demolition Smash, which basically kicked off the 1989 Royal Rumble. Both of them drew 1 and 2. So for 2 minutes they went to it. And it's not so much because it was like a great action wrestling. But to me, that just kind of sort of like set the stage for the Royal Rumble, as in, oh my God, anything can happen and you will see things that you would not normally see. Because this was actually, 89 was actually the second Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. The first one was the year before, and it was basically a TV special which had been put on to sort of coincide with a NWA pay-per-view, so we were trying to scupper that one. But that Royal Rumble, it basically wasn't very good. It was sort of, you know, the concept was there, but they did this really weird thing where good guys would only fight bad guys in it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, so you wouldn't get like, you know, faces battling faces or heels battling heels. It was really, really awkward. It's the sort of battle royale that I really, really dislike for that. Even in commentary, they kind of acknowledged that, because there was a moment when there was like 3 heels in the ring with a babyface. I think it was Junkyard Dog, and they were all basically ganging up on him. And then just as the next wrestler was about to come out, they basically made this thing. And so is it going to be 4-on-1 or 3-on-2? And it was like, you sort of, you know, you destroying the whole sort of concept of this being any sort of like sporting competition. But then when they actually did this proper on pay-per-view the next year, they basically had it so that heels would fight heels, faces would fight faces, everyone was for man for themselves. And the fact that they had, you know, the tag team champions in there against each other and basically sort of just brawling and trying to throw each other out, I think this was basically, by doing that, they basically just set the stage of what the Royal Rumble was going to be. And it just sort of, you know, for me, that was like, you know, just a really, you know, cracking moment.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Not, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it was in that year, I guess they really established that, you know, that you know, even if you had tag team partners, presumably, you know, guys who are in some way, you know, attached to each other, they're forced to work as a tag team, I guess you would say, you know, most days out of the year, but at the Royal Rumble, when it's every man for himself, it's that chance to main event WrestleMania, face the champion. It's like, in that instance, you know, everything's sort of thrown aside, and everyone's looking out for themselves. Everybody wants that chance to headline WrestleMania, win the title at WrestleMania. So yeah, that is in fact a very crucial moment in the history of the Rumble itself, where it firmly established the gimmick. All right, since we're doing top 10, I'm going to start with my least memorable moment. It's, with that said, I still think it's considerably memorable in the context and the history of Royal Rumble. I'm going to go with 2008's John Cena's unexpected return to the Royal Rumble. I think initially he had suffered an injury. People thought he was going to be out a year or so. He was going to miss that year's WrestleMania, presumably. And out of nowhere, he makes his way into the Rumble and wins the whole darn thing. They've managed to find some way around it by making it a triple threat at Mania. So they found a way to work around the fact that Cena was still kind of hurt, still not 100%. But, considering that no one expected him to be there, he was supposed to just sit out for a couple months and not, you know, be on the shelf. In fact, I remember it was the months after WrestleMania that we didn't see much of John Cena. I guess he was presumably, you know, recouping still, but they wanted to surprise everybody, have Cena come in unexpectedly. Not just make his way into the Rumble at number 30, but also win the Royal Rumble and headline WrestleMania against Triple H and Randy Orton. So for my number 10 moment, I got to go with that. It was one of these instances where you often see in Royal Rumbles, they'll have the surprise entrant. It'll take everybody, you know, everybody will mark out. Everybody will celebrate. Everyone's not expecting so-and-so to be in the Royal Rumble. I think this is the only instance where you've had that mystery person, that person that wasn't initially announced on the lineup, that came in the Rumble and threw everybody out and won the Royal Rumble.
I will talk about that more later.
Ooh. See,
it's on my list as well, that one.
I put it at number 10 because you told me I could do whatever I want, even matches that aren't necessarily, you know, the Royal Rumble match itself. So I was like, well, there's a lot of great moments here. And if I got, you know, of all these great moments, I got to go with the least of them. That's not to say this isn't an important moment, but of all the ones that I have later on in my list, I got to go with my number 10.
I tell you what, I will talk about it now, basically because it was, I'll swap two of mine around because it was only number 8 on my list. Mm. So it would only like be one, you know, so if I was going into number 9, I'll talk about this now. Yeah, I mean, I chose this because I thought it was an absolutely awesome moment. Because it was so unexpected. Because I mean, like you said, you know, no one was expecting him back. No one knew he was there, and this was also like a big name. You know, like you say, you know, you get all the sort of surprise entrance. This was like, you know, this awesome moment. And not only was the crowd reaction was just absolutely incredible. And I myself was watching it and just totally shocked and just like, you know, totally marked out for it. Triple H was in the ring, and I remember the camera went to him. There was only a few guys left, and the look on his face, and he was I think he was a face at the time. Uh-huh. The look on his face was kind of like this. Oh my, no. It was just like a really great moment. The fact that he managed to sell it that this guy was a threat to him, mm-hmm. you know, and it was like, you know, it was such a big deal that even Triple H was kind of like sort of, you know, unglued by this. And but what I found really funny about it is everyone in the audience went apeshit and everyone's cheering because John Cena's back. About 2 minutes into the Rumble, people started already. It was almost like they'd forgotten that they were meant to hate him. And immediately people started booing him when he was throwing his punches and, like, you know, so chanting Cena sucks and everything. I just thought that was hilarious that everyone wanted him back and thought it was great. It was back. And then as soon as he started wrestling, we remembered all the reasons why we didn't actually like him anyway. by the way, you're wrong when you say that it was the only time, because I think only a couple of years later, they did the exact same thing with Edge.
Oh, did they now? Yeah, I'm starting to remember. I didn't know he won that year. I knew there was a year where he was a surprise entrant, and I mistook it for the year that he came back and assaulted Jericho. But I also remember he win that one? I thought he went over the top.
I think he actually came in at number 30 as well.
Ah.
Because they pretty much just a couple of, they basically just did the same thing again.
Got it.
And he was like the surprise thing, and he basically, you know, ran down and I'll see if I can find the list, but I'm pretty sure that, no, he came in at number 29. Ah. He came in at number 29, but he did, he basically, he did win the Royal Rumble that year. So he almost came in at the end, But I remember it was the exact same thing, that was like a surprise because he was out with an injury and no one, you know, expected him to be back or anything, you know, that soon.
Yeah, that was the 2008 Royal Rumble, Madison Square Garden, where the Cena one took place. Yeah, I remember because I love the way that arena is set up. You can always tell when it's Madison Square Garden because they do it at that one little tunnel. And it's you can always tell when it's that arena, because I always find that to be so cool. I mean, I understand the logistics of why they don't do run so many events at the Madison Square Garden, but it's so cool when they have that little tunnel thing. You know exactly what arena they're at. Often not a lot of these arenas are interchangeable. You could show me, you know, 10 different setups at WWE, you know, pay-per-views, and they'd all be interchangeable, but you can always tell when they're at Madison Square Garden because they have that cool little setup. In fact, there'll be other Madison Square moments in my list of top 10 moments of Royal Rumble history. All right, so you mentioned your number nine is your Cena moment's number nine, correct?
Yes.
Okay. you mentioned great reactions from the crowds and the wrestlers from Royal Rumble appearances. I'm gonna have to put a tie here because I had to put which one I enjoyed more. So we're gonna see this also later on my list where I have moments that are tied because they're so spectacular. But at number nine, I have 2015's Roman Reigns winning the Royal Rumble and 2014's Batista winning the Royal Rumble just for the crowd reaction alone. If I have to edge out one more than the other, I'd probably go with the Reigns one Reigns winning the Rumble was so, you know, the crowd rejected it so strongly that they even booed The Rock, who was there to raise Roman Reigns' hand. But at the same time, there was also the conquering hero, Batista, coming back to WWE after being gone for, I think, almost 10 years. Having the crowd just boom out the building. I put it on par with the Batista one because Roman Reigns, you can tell he didn't let it get to him, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to put that one a little bit higher. But at the same time, you've seen the photos and the videos that happened after the event where Batista kind of flipped on the fans, and it even ruined. They had a recent documentary of Batista, and you can tell they wanted it to go a certain way. But when you're watching the documentary, they can't ignore the reality that he's getting booed and that he wins the Rumble and things don't quite work out the way he wants to, and the documentary just sort of just ends on the sad note. So for me, that's why I had to tie it. It's like, no, those are both great moments. They're both very similar moments in the sense that people wanted Daniel Bryan to win those Rumbles and he didn't, and the crowd let them know that they want him to win.
Yeah, because I think it was the Daniel Bryan thing was involved in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm getting my years correct here, the Batista one was where, didn't he get eliminated early in that, or was that the one where people were expecting him to be there and he wasn't?
2014, he was not in the Rumble, and 2015.
But people thought there was people going to their heads where it was going to be.
Yeah, because they were expecting him to show up eventually, and then when they found out that Rey Mysterio was number 30 and that there were no more entrants, that's when they got really upset.
Yeah.
2015 was the year that he did make his way into the Rumble, but he was very quickly eliminated.
Yeah, which again pissed off the fans. But this was the thing, people, it's one of those things that, you know, the fans wanted Daniel Bryan. And the thing is, the year before, they'd managed to get they managed to get Daniel Bryan into WrestleMania, just by their reactions. And so we obviously, for Roman Reigns, we obviously thought we can do it again. And but this time, you know, they weren't gonna budge.
Yeah. So that's why it's on number nine. I mean, there's some great Royal Rumble moments as opposed to, you know, things that the fans cheer and they love. And it's one of these memories that, you know, we're going to remember for years to come. But that's the reason why it's number nine. It's like, that was just so great. Just the fans openly rejecting the Royal Rumble winners. I mean, it's like up until that point, you know, people had won the Rumble. It may have been someone they weren't expecting or somebody they didn't necessarily like, but, you know, they didn't openly object and boo the winner. And the best part is both instances were examples of a babyface winning and the crowd booing it. That's what makes it even better. Cause maybe that kind of reaction you could kind of sort of skirt under the rug if it's like a Triple H winning and the crowd hates him and they boo him, but no. It's
you know what's funny is if I remember correctly, the Batista one as well, there was a bit of forewarning early in the show. because they were doing these live interviews with the wrestlers, asking their like opinions, and they asked Ric Flair who he thought would win the Royal Rumble, and he said Batista. And normally they're not supposed to say who he's actually going to win it, because it's, you know, but in that case it made sense because Batista was like one of Flair's friends, so it made sense for him to do that. And as soon as he said that, everyone in the audience started booing. And Flair's like turns around and looks at the audience with this look of shock in his face, and then he starts saying, "Learn to love it! Learn to love it!" But yeah, so it wasn't exactly, you know, 100% unexpected.
All right, this is it for number 9. Dazzle, what's your number 8 Royal Rumble moment? As
okay, well, this is just one that's always stayed with me just because it was such a bizarre and like really funny at the same time. And it's from 1991. Mm-hmm. And it's very late in the match. There's quite a lot of wrestlers still in there. And Brian and the bell goes, and it's Brian Knobbs, who's actually making his debut, really, because him and the Nasty Boys are only just coming to WWF, and someone had got injured just before the Royal Rumble, so he was a late replacement. And he runs down to the ring, and he gets in there. And immediately, pretty much, all the other wrestlers, and at this point, there's about like, you know, there's a lot of wrestlers still in there. There's about like, you know, at least 10 wrestlers. As a gang, slowly, one by one, all start to like basically just start pounding on him. Pretty much everyone in the ring, basically all of them just sort of like circle him and just start beating the daylights out of him. And to a stage that you couldn't actually, the crowd had around him so much and beating him up, but you couldn't actually see him. And the funny, it just like was this like really bizarre thing. And we're talking like heat faces and heels as well. Everyone was basically wanting a piece of him. And I'm guessing that this was kind of maybe some sort of hazing type or like initiation of some sort, or maybe because he'd come in from, you know, from NWA not so long ago, it was something. It just looked really, really funny, but he was in his first night in and it was basically like, being his sort of like, you know, initiation. And he sort of like, it was actually the second but last man in the Rumble and everything. He survived, but it was just like this really, really funny moment. And it's happened before other times as well, because I remember one year Daniel Puder, who had just won the Tough Enough, and he was basically in the Rumble, and he basically got chopped the living daylights out of by I think it was Guerrero, Benoit, and Hardcore Holly. And then they like threw him out, and yeah. So that was kind of like an initiation as well, but it seems. So it was just one of those like, you know, funny little sort of, you know, moments in there.
that is a wacky moment. I'm remembering, because would that have been a receipt for what happened between Daniel Puder and Kurt Angle in that one SmackDown?
Probably. I mean, it was after that. And so I think it was kind of like is sort of like an initiation from, and let's face it, the wrestlers have always resented the ones who win Tough Enough. You know, they're sort of like, even though it's like, it's one of those things where it's the company that basically comes up with this, and this is, the wrestlers who win are just basically sort of guys, you know, taking an opportunity that's been presented for them. The other wrestlers seem to really resent that. So they're giving this opportunity, and then they basically hate them for sort of taking it. But yeah, I think the Daniel Puder thing, I think once he did that Kurt Angle thing, he never really seemed to basically be given a shot. It seemed to be that they basically wanted to sort of like, you know, take him down. Apparently there was some talk that he had a bit of an attitude backstage and everything. But yeah, I think the Kurt Angle thing, even though it sort of did him a lot of favors, you know, in terms of sort of like, you know, with the fans, it sort of like, you know, got him over there. I think it did not do him any favors when it came to his actual sort of long-term career.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there was an instance where they were doing these, I guess you would say, these events for Tough Enough. They did all these, challenges. That's the term I was looking for.
Yeah.
They did this Tough Enough challenges, and some of them were kind of wacky and over the top, you know, as you expect from pro wrestling. But then one of them was going, I guess, toe to toe with Kurt Angle in a grappling affair. And obviously, cause Daniel Puder, had a background in mixed martial arts, he was able to go toe to toe with Kurt Angle. And I guess that wasn't supposed to go the way it was. He was supposed to basically just be bulldozed by Kurt. But because it was a bit of a, I guess it was supposed to be real to an extent, that he was able to hold his own, if not get a little bit of an advantage on Kurt Angle.
Well, he got in a chokehold.
Yeah.
A neck crank or, you know, whatever you call it. I'm not really good with the terms. But yeah, Kurt Angle basically dispatched one guy. And then sort of got all cocking like, who's next? Who's next? And Pew just stands up and basically gets him right into with this crank. And they basically had to sort of like, you know, break it up, you know, cause he didn't seem to like want to tap and it looked like he was sort of like, you know, could have got hurt. But what really sort of like pissed the WWF, people off backstage is as soon as it happened, everyone in the audience started chanting UFC, which is not what they wanted at all. And there was a lot of Angle was really pissed backstage of basically being put in that position. And so, you know, and so some wrestler, I think there was a story that apparently Taz was somebody who was basically, after it had happened, was saying, you know, we need to do something with this because we've been given this ready-made angle. We've got something on fire here. We need to capitalize this. But in typical WWF fashion, WWE fashion, they basically, you know, they just sort of quashed it and it wasn't something they'd sort of devised. So they basically just like, they didn't look a gift horse in the mouth. They shot the horse.
But yeah, that was a funny moment. I'm actually looking at the grappling affair between the two, but I had not heard of that instance of Benoit, Angle, and Holly slapping around Pooter. So
yeah.
All right. My number 8 moment is going to be the first of many, but it's a match that happened at the Royal Rumble match. I mean, the event itself, but not necessarily the Royal Rumble match itself. The match that, to a degree, I guess you would say, would put the stamp on Triple H as a headliner main eventer, because we've seen up until this point at the 2000 Royal Rumble. You know, up until this point, I think Hunter had won the title maybe once, twice. You know, he'd won the title, but I guess he wasn't really considered a tippy-top guy because this was, I guess, you know, in the Monday Night War era where you could presumably put the title on somebody and they wouldn't have to headline a show, or they could do it for TV, or, you know, if they put them in the ring with somebody really strong. I think this is the match that really solidified Triple H as a guy that can go out there and have a great main event match, who can go out there and be a big superstar. The match I'm referring to is Cactus Jack versus Triple H at Royal Rumble in the year 2000, where they had the street fight. Also at Madison Square Gardens, we mentioned it earlier, the great instances of Madison Square Garden being very important to, you know, the matches in the Royal Rumble events history. And this is the one I think that sort of takes the cake. This is the match that, you know, obviously people will remember the Hell in the Cell match that they had the month after at No Way Out. But this is the match I really felt that put Triple H on the map. This was sort of Mick Foley. He was sort of on his way out of the wrestling industry. This was supposed to be his swan song to a degree. And this match just really put over Triple H like $1 million, really made him look like a, you know, a guy who was not just an you know, he's, I guess, sort of synonymous, the thing with him, Dave Meltzer's the quote, he's a B-plus player. I think this is the instance where he sort of proved himself. He's an A guy. He's an A, maybe A-minus, but definitely A guy. We can go out there and have a fantastic match with somebody that people remember. And, Dazzy, do you have memories of this match?
Oh yeah, I mean this, and you're right what you say. Triple H was a top guy, but he wasn't. It was something that was sort of you saw like as a good hand, but it was like in the shadow of people like The Rock and Austin and that sort of thing. And this was one where this was one of the first times that I sort of remember him having a really, really blow away match. And I always think that of all the wrestlers Triple H wrestled, the one he owes more to than any is Mick Foley. Mm-hmm. Because it was that feud with Mick Foley that really, really sort of elevated him into that sort of that spot. Even though he was champion before it, this was the one that really, you know, Mick Foley really made him look $1 million and gave him some of these like really, really great matches. And they had a lot of really good chemistry between them. But yeah, this, you know, the street fight, and I think a lot of people had a lot of respect because it was such a brutal, it was such a brutal match, and there was sort of obviously a lot of blood, which you could do in those days and everything. And in fact, but it was like, you know, a really, you know, this was like a real game changer for it. But I remember watching this show. That show was a pretty good one. You know, I remember that show. The Rumble itself wasn't a really a very good Rumble at all, but I do remember the show being, you know, really, really good. And yeah, that match was, you know, like you say, phenomenal. Even today, when you've had so many sort of like hardcore matches and street fights and that, something like, you know, that one still stands out as a really good one.
Mm-hmm. All right, Nezza, what's your number seven moment for Royal Rumble history?
Okay, my number seven one, and it's a bit of a weird one because it's kind of, it's almost like a situation that was really botched. I don't think it went the way they meant it to do. And it's from 1992. And it's basically the, which was one of the great Rumbles, which we will come to later in my list. But it was really the ending of the Rumble, and it's where, it's Royal Rumble that Ric Flair won. Mm. And it's basically the moment in the match where it came down to three wrestlers, and it was, Hogan, Flair, and Sid Justice. And they really botched this because basically what happened is Sid Justice throws Hogan out. It comes at him from behind and throws him out. And then Hogan goes mad, and then he grabs Sid Justice and he pulls him out of the ring. And I think they wanted this to be basically that Sid Justice had turned on Hogan and was going heel basically. But it did not come across like that at all. And the crowd certainly didn't react how they wanted, because as soon as Hogan was thrown over the ring, I think they wanted to be the big heel spot, the crowd started cheering and jumping up and down because Hogan had been eliminated. Now, partly that, I think, is because Flair was basically so popular in this match, and also probably because Hogan had been around so long, people started to get tired of him. But afterwards, they had a confrontation in the ring between Sid Justice and Hogan. And the crowd was chanting, basically, Hogan sucks. And basically, when he's doing like the sort of like the cup in his ear bit, they're booing him. And when Sid Justice did it, they're cheering him. So the whole thing basically sort of was complete botch from start to finish. And the thing is, I remember watching this and I was thinking to myself, is Hogan turning heel here? Because he just seemed like a heel thing to do, you know, to be the one that's eliminated and then be, the, you know, pull out the baby face and everything. It just felt to me like that was like, you know, a heel move. And you could tell that obviously it hadn't gone the way they wanted because, and they did something really weird, which actually put me off WWF. I really got so mad for them for doing this, is they changed, when they showed you the highlights on TV and on the Coliseum video that they released of the show, they changed the commentary and the sound of the crowd. So basically, in the original commentary, Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon are basically just sort of doing it by, you know, basically just saying, you know, he's been eliminated, blah, blah, blah. When they did the commentary, they changed it so that Gorilla Monsoon was calling Sid Justice a thief in the night and basically sort of, you know, to make it clear that he was meant to be the heel. But what they also did is they changed the crowd reactions. So when Hogan's eliminated, they added in booing. And then afterwards, they put in a fake Hogan chant to make it sound like that the crowd was actually on Hogan's side. Now, if you want to change the commentary, that's fine. But changing the crowd reaction, to me, that's unforgivable. If something's not gone the way you want it to go, that's your fault. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not 1984 where you can basically change who the country's at war with. It was just something that I thought was a really weird thing to do. And I absolutely hated them for doing it. But it's so amusing watching it because you can see the look on Hogan's face when the crowd's booing him. And you can just sort of tell that this look on his face, it's like kind of, uh-oh, what have we done?
Yes, that was certainly a wacky moment. But I remember I was having a conversation with Comic Conversations co-host Alex about, you know, the times that Hogan sort of been, you know, where he's supposed to be the number one good guy, but there's the little things he's done over the years that people kind of question. Like, he was out there, he's a babyface, he's a good guy, he's out there having a wrestling match, and he'll do a back break for some reason. It's like, okay, that's a weird spot for a good guy wrestler, but whatever, you get over it. There's instances where obviously, you know, historically, if you go back and look at the Macho Man feud, it's like in most of those instances, Savage was 100% right to be upset. You know, Savage, you know, would say he was grandstanding and hot dogging, as it were. You know, there were instances where they were having a tag team match and he had to carry to Elizabeth. That's fine and all. You know, make sure the officials come see or you take care of her, but he just abandoned his tag team partner in the middle of a tag team title defense. It's like, okay, that doesn't make sense. And then there was an instance where he's, you know, trying to glob on Elizabeth. And I guess the one that people cite, the number one was the one you just mentioned, the 92 Rumble, where Hogan gets thrown out. And I guess the spot was supposed to be, he was supposed to tumble out with Hogan or whatever. And I'm questioning, it's like, couldn't they just have the spot where Flair just takes advantage of Sid dumping out Hogan and you just have, you know, the spot where Flair comes behind him and tosses him out as he's distracted? Like, this could have been salvaged. So I don't understand why they had to do the bit where it really makes Hogan look really bad.
Yeah, I don't either. The only thing I can think of is that they wanted to basically Hogan to be involved in the finish. You know, even though they were putting over Flair, they didn't want him to basically be the one that they wanted to give a bit of sort of controversy in there with Flair's victory. But it was just, I mean, to be honest, but to me, that the other way to do it would be to have Hogan throw Sid Justice out, and then Sid Justice were the one to basically grab Hogan, and then him and Flair between them throw him out. To me, that would be the one that would make sense. It just seemed like a really poorly thought out strategy. But talking about Hogan and his heel things, when in the Royal Rumble, when he used to come in, he used to tear his shirt off, and then he would use his shirt as a weapon. He would strangle, you know, and he did it before when he eliminated the big was eliminated by the Twin Towers a few years previous. He got back in the ring and eliminated the Big Boss Man. So, you know, there were plenty of times. And the thing is, Hogan at one point was so popular that no matter what he did, you know, he could basically win by cheating and everything, and he would still basically be sort of super popular with the crowd. But yeah, obviously on this occasion, it backfired.
But yeah, that's just one of the many instances. People would often cite how John Cena in the past has had instances like this, but you know, it's always nice to see someone like that started with Hogan. All right. My number 7 moment for Royal Rumble history is not too long ago. In fact, it was last year. The triple threat match. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins. Dazza, have you seen this match?
I have, yes.
It's an absolute spectacular of a three. I obviously, you know, historically, I'm a guy who likes to see wrestling sort of presented as a pseudo sport, like the one-on-one affairs. I'm not really a fan of three ways. Even when I saw this match on paper, I was like, really? But, with that all said, this match was absolutely spectacular. I remember when this match happened, people didn't even care about the Royal Rumble match itself, considering this completely blew everybody away. People that objectively hate WWE because just their matches aren't as good as you would say other promotions out there, even they sort of tipped their hat to this match, was so great. I think when you do, not just in the history of the Royal Rumble, but I think just history of three ways itself, this is one that really certainly takes the cake. It's just, you know, you have three guys who couldn't be more different: John Cena, Brock Lesnar, and Seth Rollins. They found a way where, you know, they all had their I guess their roles to play in the match, and somehow it managed to make its way, and it made a really good, really fun three-way. And I this is one of the reasons why, you know, you can't sleep on any match in WWE sometimes, especially on a big platform like the Royal Rumble. It's like you never know when you're going to get these unexpected gems. So, and I think just if you're doing objectively the best matches in the Royal Rumble history that even include the Rumble match itself, this has got to be on most people's lists.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I prefer one-on-one matches. I think the three ways and are pretty much overdone nowadays.
Because often what they'll do the finish where the one guy, you know, he steals the finish, and I believe that's what we had in this match. But you know, this match was so great. You had the great dynamic of Seth Rollins being the high flyer and Brock Lesnar being the giant muscle man, and Cena sort of being, I guess you would say, a medium between that. It made for a great dynamic.
Yeah, this is one of the times when it just does work. You know, it was a real good match and real enjoyable, and yeah. But yeah, this was a good one.
Yes. All right, let's move on to number 6, Dazza. What is your number 6 moment?
My number 6 is another of these things that basically was really, really unique at the time and ended up being like really, really overdone. And it's from the 1995 Royal Rumble. And it's actually the finale. This is one where Shawn Michaels wins. And the Rumble itself was, it was a bit of a, it was a bit of anticlimax when we got to it because we, for, I think for time constraints, we had to basically, reduce the times to a minute. In between entrance. So it was only like a half hour Royal Rumble, so it seemed a bit rushed. But right, it had one of those classic moments where the Bulldog clotheslines Shawn Michaels over
the ropes.
Oh, yes,
I know what spot you're talking about, yes.
And then he basically, it looks like he's been eliminated. The camera was perfect. It was sort of, you know, you just see like sort of Michaels from the back and he's gone. And then the British Bulldog's music plays and he basically sort of goes, the camera follows him and he's sort of, you know, celebrating. And I remember watching that thinking, oh, wow. Because I was expecting, because Diesel at the time was the champion, it seemed like logical that Michaels was basically going to, win the Rumble and face him. But it was just like, you weren't really given time to basically sort of think any of that. Because in about like 5 seconds later, Michaels runs up from behind and knocks him out of the ring. And then it shows you the video replay. And the video replay was in slow motion. And it was so great because it was basically Michaels hanging on. And he's sort of like, sort of dangling there and one foot goes on the rope and the commentators are watching me because one foot's on there. No, is his other one going? And you're sort of like watching as if the other foot's about to step and it doesn't. And so he's not eliminated. And it was just a really creative way to end the match. And I just thought it was awesome. The only problem is that it worked so well that they pretty much started doing it in every Royal Rumble afterwards. There would be somebody who would be knocked out of there and he'd be sort of hanging there. And just sort of managed to save on. And then they did it where you would get two people hanging at the same time and they'd both be sort of like dueling, like kicking each other and stuff. And then even the Big Show did it one year. You know, at one point it was like something that all the acrobatic wrestlers did and even, you know, but then like the Big Show did it as well. You know, and I know that was kind of like meant to be a bit of a goofy comedy spot, but it was just sort of, you know, it was one of those things that like has been sort of like, you know, it happens all the time now. But at the time, that first time you see it, it was just, I think, just a really, really great creative way to end the Rumble.
Yeah. Like you said, that would eventually become the Shawn Michaels rule where, you know, it used to be, you know, you get tossed over the Rumble and then that'd be the end of you. But when that year, when they established the Shawn Michaels rule, the idea of, you know, you can still have one foot touching the mat and still, you know, It's still not considered an elimination, but that was interesting. Over the years, they would have fun with it. Obviously, I think this is probably going to be later on your list, and I hate to blow your spot, but I'm just going to mention it. The spot where you had Bret Hart and Lex Luger being eliminated at the Royal Rumble at the same time, I believe it was the 2000 Rumble where Rock and Big Show, where, you know, watching the event itself, it looked like Rock had won, but you go back and look at, they even did an angle out of it. Whereas, you know, they were both eliminated at the same time, but they couldn't figure out who was eliminated first. And that was a bit of a controversy. And that's why we got the main event we did at, you know, WrestleMania, I think it was, 14. So, you know, they've played with that idea of, you know, the Shawn Michaels rule, you know, if it's 1 foot, 2 foot, and then they've even had fun with the way people are eliminated or the way they managed to stay in the match. But yeah, I think this is the first of many instances where they did the technically not eliminated gimmick. And I thought that was fun. All right. My number 6 moment is also a non-Royal Rumble match, but a match that took place at the Royal Rumble event. And in 2007, John Cena faced Umaga in a last man standing match. Usually I'm not a fan of these over the top gimmicks like Umaga. I think they're kind of goofy. The idea you're going to have the wacky Islander, whatever, the Samoan bulldozer. That was a little goofy. Didn't much care for the feud. But they managed to, I guess, you know, they'd been feuding from pay-per-view to pay-per-view and eventually they blew it off in this, the Royal Rumble match itself in the last man standing match for the WWE title. Where it was a really good last man standing match. There was even this really cool instance where, you know, I think there's been stories before in the past where Vince McMahon doesn't like people watching them put the ring together, or he's very particular about the way he is about the ring. You know, he won't allow advertisers on the mat. But there was an instance where Umaga started taking apart the ring itself, and he used, I guess, what was it? One of the corners, he managed to take it apart. And his finish was the Samoan thumb. So, you know, considering his finish was lunging at opponent with his thumb at the throat, he took the ring corner apart. And obviously when you do that, the corner itself is sort of pointy when they point it into the post. So he used that as a bit, but then, you know, obviously he missed because we can't have a decapitation in WWE. But, yeah, I just remember that was a match that, you know, I had no interest. Obviously you had John Cena in there at the height of his hatred. I think it was like in 2007. You had Umaga, which was kind of a goofy character, but you know, both guys in and of themselves are pretty good workers, but you know, it was a match I was just watching because I was waiting for the Rumble. Just like I mentioned earlier, sometimes you sleep on these kind of matches because you're not expecting anything. And then they go out there and have an absolute match that really just floors people. It really takes people by surprise. And it's one of these matches that, you know, when you think of the Rumble, not necessarily the matches itself and the undercard, it's like, okay, maybe you might get a match like I mentioned earlier, Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins. You might get, you know, my personal opinion, although I did my research and people thought highly of this match, but you know, for me anyway, I thought more highly of the John Cena versus Umaga Last Man Standing match. So that's why I put it at number 6. Alright, okay. Guys, we're halfway home. All these Royal Rumble moments have so far been pretty great. Let's go into number 5. Dazzle, what's your number 5 Royal Rumble moment?
Well, my number 5 is the end of the 1994 Royal Rumble between Bret Hart and Lex Luger, where both of them went over the top rope.
I blew your spot. No, I teased
you. You blew my spot.
No, I teased it.
This was actually a really good Rumble. Anyway, for me, well, at least I enjoyed it because they did something here with Bret Hart where they'd had him injured in an earlier match, in a tag match, and sort of like, you know, he was turned on by Owen Hart. And what they did later in the match is the countdown ends and the siren goes off and no one comes out. The camera's just sort of on the sort of back, and then sort of Vince McMahon goes, "That must have been Bret Hart's number."
Aww.
And then later on, all of a sudden, the siren goes again, and sort of like, you know, about sort of 5 spots later, and it's Bret Hart limping towards the ring. And it was a great thing because everyone expected, well, Bret Hart, he's going to be like Randy Savage back in the Royal Rumble a few years earlier when he never came out. Bret Hart came out, and later they sort of like tried to pass it off at, there was somebody else who was meant to be injured. I forgot who he was. It was, I think also that, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who used to be Norman the Lunatic had a gimmick where he was basically like an overweight wrestler who would basically just sort of like eat and stuff. And they basically had it that he'd basically got ill overeating or something. But it was a great moment because it was, you know, weren't expecting it. So Brett got in there and he basically, you know, fought down to the final two. And this was really interesting backstage as well, because the reason why they did this double elimination is they wanted to see who was the most popular in the building between Luger and Hart. So they basically was watching. So when the referee, when I had one referee pointing to Hart had won and one referee pointing to Luger. And so the fans were, unbeknownst to them, actually voting for who was basically going to be the big star. And as it happens, that, you know, Hart was basically, he actually sort of got more cheers than Luger on that night. And so they basically sort of, you know, decided that Luger, despite he's the one they've been pushing, they went with Hart. But that whole Rumble was a really good one because they were doing a story. And again, I think the Royal Rumbles that I like the best are the ones where you've got several storylines going on, you know. And in that one, you have the storyline where you had Diesel doing the big thing, how he was the one who was basically eliminating loads and loads of people one after another, which was the first time I think they'd actually done that gimmick. But then you also had the gimmick where a bounty had been put on Lex Luger. So basically all the foreign heel wrestlers were all attacking Luger. They attacked him backstage, and then they were sort of trying to eliminate him in the match. And then you have the whole Hart thing coming out, and even though, you know, he was injured and stuff. So the fact that they've got like multiple storylines going on to keep you interested, as opposed to sometimes where they basically have just like one storyline and one guy who were basically sort of pushing and everything. So this was a really good Rumble, but just that ending I thought was absolutely awesome and done really, really well as well. Because, you know, the two of them went over as one. It's funny, actually, because I remember, I don't know if this is on your list, many, many years later, they seemed to, like, recreate this when they did John Cena and Batista. Mm-hmm. But because the both of them went over the top rope and sort of, you know. But it turned out that one was actually a total accident.
Apparently. Oh, that's right. It's one of those things where you watch it and it sort of seems like it worked out perfectly because the idea was, you know, both Cena and Batista were on the up and up. They were making their way to the main event. And I thought the idea was, well, we want Batista to win, but at the same time, we don't want to hurt John Cena. So we'll do this thing where they're both eliminated at the same time. And because it's happened live at the event itself, you know, they're going to continue the match until we get a legitimate winner. But I didn't know that was a mistake.
Apparently, yeah, because to me, it always just looks like a perfect, because if you remember, Vince McMahon walks out straight away, and that's when he tore his quads. You know, he got to the ring and tore his quads. Even though he tore his quads, he was still berating everyone for screwing up, and then sort of start the match up and Batista basically dumps him out and wins proper. But yeah, apparently that was actually, but the story goes that was actually a botch. We were basically just supposed to do a spot near the ropes, and both of them accidentally went over.
I did not know that. See, not only is this is this show and this list, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's enjoyable, it's also informative. I did not know that. And this is a wrestling subscriber observer subscriber. I didn't know that.
Reading is your friend. Reading back issues is your friend.
All right, a moment that actually required a lot of research for me, and you know, I'm sure this will probably have several instances where Dads are probably on this list, and I could be blowing his spot yet again. But for me, I had let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 way. Well, no, I'll go with 4-way tie. I guess 5 is too preposterous, but 4 is, you know, legitimate. I'll mention them in order because they're all very similar. They're all the spot I mentioned earlier, where it's sort of similar to what you mentioned earlier with the Shawn Michaels spot. It's the idea of they're thrown out of the ring, but both feet don't necessarily touch the floor. So going in chronological order, you have the 2011 John Morrison Spider-Man / parkour spot where he jumps on the guardrail like Spider-Man, stopping his feet from touching the ground, and he climbs into the guardrail and jumps back into the steps and then into his way into the ropes or into the ring. So I thought that spot was particularly impressive. In years to come, Kofi Kingston would take that spot where you had in 2012, you had the Kofi Kingston doing the headstand spot where his feet aren't touching the ground, but his hands are. And he does that to get into the ring. The 2014, what I call the leap of faith, where he manages to, he jumps on the guardrail and he manages to jump all the way into the ring from the security rail. I thought that was pretty great. The 2015 spot where he's caught by the Rosebuds. I always told myself, it's like when I saw Adam Rose make his WWE debut, when he came out with the Rosebuds, his party crew, I was like, oh, they have to do a spot where Adam Rose gets thrown out of the ring and his party posse, his Rosebuds caught him and threw him back into the ring. So that's why, I think a couple of years ago as well, it's not on my list, but I seem to also remember a spot where Kofi was thrown into the announce table. And instead of making the leap like he'd done in years past, he gets one of the announcers' chairs. They're leather bound wheelchairs or whatever. They're desk chairs, and he manages to pogo himself back into the ring. So, I mean, all these instances are great, but they're all sort of redundant. I guess they're all, you know, I guess versions of all the same spot. So that's why I put it in my number 5 spot. They're very funny and they're very cute and they're all memorable. Everybody remembers it. People are wondering this year if they were going to get instances of that happening. But at the same time, I didn't feel like cluttering up my top 10 list with, oh, the first instance with John Morrison and the next spot with Kofi Kingston. It's like, okay, I'm just going to put them all away. All as one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's becoming like a tradition for Kofi Kingston as well, but he always does something like really, you know, live acid. I don't know if you alluded to it, but there's the one where he ended up on the security barriers and basically sort of like, you know, tiptoes and walks away all around it before jumping onto the steps and getting back in. So yeah, he's, is he in the Rumble?
Yes, all three members of the New Day are in the Rumble this year. In fact,
I'm sure he'll be doing another one, man.
In fact, there was a spot last year where Kofi was thrown out of the ring, but I think Big E had been previously eliminated. So he was thrown over the top rope and he landed on Big E's shoulders. So it was a spot where Big E sort of paraded him around the ring. I think he grabs a bag of popcorn and he's eating and he manages to make his way back into the ring. So, you know, who's to say we won't get another spot like that in this year's Rumble? Or rather, who's to say that didn't already happen concerning when this show probably comes out?
Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure if you take part in the Royal Rumble drinking games, you'll be taking a shot at that bit.
All right, Dezza, that does it for number five. Let's move on to number four.
Number four, this is actually, it's in the Royal Rumble, but it's more like a singles match. And it's from 2007. And it's basically the finale that basically came down to Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
Ooh.
Normally when you get down to a final two, you get sort of, it's almost like a sort of short little sort of bit of action before the final one. Eliminated.
You get a bit of that as well at the beginning when, you know, you're talking about the first two participants in the Rumble. It's just them two. Yeah. And the two of them are in there for, I would say, about 3 minutes before the next participant comes out. So yeah, the way the Rumble starts and ends is sort of, you know, it's often mano a mano.
Yeah, but in this case, it was basically two of the great workers, and they just basically just had a really, really great match between them two. The sort of match which was almost sort of it was a bit the envy of sort of, you know, two guys having like, you know, a short like 5 minute match. It was just like, you know, just a really phenomenal little encounter. And I actually remember watching this and getting really, really excited because I thought, I want to see these guys. It could have been years before that you'd seen these two actually have an actual match between them two. I think the last time might have actually been the one, funnily enough, at the Royal Rumble, where it was the casket match where Shawn got injured. Back in, would it be 98 or something like that? But it was, it was a long time between we'd seen these two actually sort of face off. I remember watching it and getting really excited, thinking I would love to see a long match between these two. And I think that might have been the year that we actually sort of, maybe not that year, but maybe the year after, that we actually got the first of the two WrestleMania matches, which was so awesome. But it was just like, you know, it just showed him in that sort of, it was a, you know, a great way to sort of, you know, to cap off the Royal Rumble. But it was also just sort of, it just showed you, you know, what these two guys could do. And both of them were sort of like, they were basically sort of like, you know, on the experience, because both of them were sort of like, you know, past the best athletically, but together they brought out the best in each other. You could just see the glimpse in there that they had some real chemistry. They knew how to sort of work and really get a really great match. And to me, because the Royal Rumble is fun and exciting and action and everything, but it's not something where you expect to see great wrestling, you know, action, you know, sort of, you know, old school wrestling. And for 5 minutes, this is what you actually got in there. A really, really good confrontation and a really good match. And that's, to me, that's why it's on my list as one of the great Royal Rumble moments.
There you go. All right. For my number four instance is, you know, we mentioned all these times where there's been historical spots, historical wins. I'm going to have to go with another history-making experience where Rey Mysterio in the 2006 Royal Rumble set the record for time in the ring for one Royal Rumble. It was 1 hour and 2 minutes, 62 minutes, previously dethroning Chris Benoit's spot, and I'm sure WWE's glad about it so that when they do their statistics spot. But he managed to outbeat Benoit's record by a year. I think they hear that he won the Rumble. He was, number one, Chris Benoit, but when Ray won it, he did it number two. It was done, I think, the year prior Eddie Guerrero's passing. So this match was a bit of a tribute to Eddie Guerrero. Dazzle, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, this was, I think this was just a few months after Guerrero had passed away.
I believe he passed away in November, and this was, you know, the Royal Rumble always takes place in January, so, you know, it was coming fresh off the heels of that. Obviously, you would get the tacky angle that would follow this, where Randy Orton is trying to bait Rey Mysterio into giving up his Royal Rumble spot, where Randy Orton tells Rey Mysterio that Eddie Guerrero's in hell. It's like, it's wacky, over the top. It's kind of goofy, but obviously, I think it won that year's Wrestling Observer Award for most tacky and appalling gimmick. And
he smashed up the car as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, is that going to sell any more pay-per-view buys? It's like, I doubt it. But with that said, obviously, this was the big tribute match. Vince McMahon, who's not really one to care about the little guy, but I think he let it go in this one instance, because you had Rey Mysterio, who was very close to Eddie, and Rey had never won the Rumble. He had never won the world title. So, you know, in tribute to Eddie Guerrero, how much he meant to everybody, they allowed him to win the Rumble, and they allowed him to win the world title at WrestleMania. So for me, that's why I got to put it my number four for historical Royal Rumble spot, because really up until this point, Rey, and no one really thought Rey was ever going to win a Royal Rumble, because just, you look at his height, and obviously he's a top superstar. He can be in a top feud, but you thought, is he ever going to win the big one? Is he ever going to win the world title? Is he ever going to win the Royal Rumble and headline WrestleMania? It's like, probably not. He's not one of these guys. I mentioned earlier with Triple H, he's sort of a B-plus guy in the eyes of Vince McMahon, but with the passing of Eddie Guerrero, he was able to, not only just go out there and win the Rumble, but make history as far as the guy. And who's to say that didn't happen this year? But up until now, Rey Mysterio has the record of longest in the Royal Rumble match itself.
Yeah, I thought the match itself was really, really good. I had problems with the sort of, not so much with what they did here, because this was kind of like a nice little sort of, like, tribute as such. I had more of a problem with, what actually came afterwards. And also the fact that this time they weren't actually going to go with Mysterio at Mania. Mm-hmm. The idea was that basically he'd win the Rumble and then Randy Orton would take the spot from him and Mysterio would go off and do something else. But basically they decided to, that fans' reactions were basically gave him the impression that Mysterio would be popular at Mania. And then when Mania actually came around, Mysterio was actually booed. the fans really started to turn out. I think part of it, because it was a three-way with him, Kurt Angle, and Randy Orton. And people really sided more with Kurt Angle. They basically wanted him to be the guy. I think people sort of really knew why Mysterio was in that spot by now. And there was a bit of a bad taste in mouth. And it was really uncomfortable as well, him winning the title at WrestleMania and basically getting booed and everything. It was just sort of, the match itself was sort of, a fun Royal Rumble. If we were going to have Mysterio win it, I think having him start at the starting position and lasting all the way and winning, I think that was the way to do it, as opposed to what we've done with some, is having them come in the last couple of sort of spots and win it that way. This was the right way to actually get it done.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you never thought it would happen, but it's cool that they were willing to stick with the gimmick thing, Yeah. All right. Let's move on to number three. Dazzle, what's going to be your number three Royal Rumble historical moment?
My number three historical Royal Rumble moment is back in 2001. And it's not so much a moment. It's just probably one of my favorite performances in the Royal Rumble. And it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was the actual winner of it. And it was just the way that this went down. It was just everything that you love about Steve Austin. And I actually watched this earlier this morning. Just to sort of remind myself of, because this was the one thing that I didn't have as fresh memories of. But this was actually one of my favorite Rumbles, the 2001 one. It was really action-packed. There was, a lot of the top stars were in there. Some really good storylines. We did a gimmick with Kane where they really got him over as a monster without him sort of basically being just like a, the guy who stands there and basically eliminates one after another. We actually really had him in there for a long time, did a lot with him. But the thing that I loved about the Austin thing is there was a moment in the match where Undertaker and Kane, you know, the Brothers of Destruction, to clear the ring, apart from The Rock, who was lying outside injured. And they were basically sort of like, you know, whoever came down, they were basically beat up and throw out. And then they sort of wait, both standing there waiting for who the next guy comes out. And the music, the glass breaks music comes out. And Austin strolls out. And he basically, the look on his face, he's strolling towards the ring, marching there. And he doesn't give a shit that he's basically coming up against the Brothers of Destruction. But there's no fear in his eyes. He's just staring at him. He's just walking down. And he don't care if he's facing The Undertaker and Kane at the same time. He's just walking, strolling down there. And he just looks such a badass, and the crowd's going apeshit. And then Triple H, who he's basically had an altercation with earlier in the night, comes running out and attacks him from behind and basically sort of beats him to a pulp. And, you know, and actually sort of, he actually, Austin bleeds, which you normally don't get in the Royal Rumble. It's not really like a, you know, a match for blood or anything, but Austin bleeds. And for, you know, this beatdown take, you know, goes on for, you know, quite a long time. And Austin's lying outside the ring and he's injured it. And you think that it's, this is actually going to be one of those instances where it's a way of getting Austin out of the match without him actually being eliminated. You think he's actually not going to end up taking part in the match. And then the, you know, the match carries on. And eventually Austin gets in the ring and he basically immediately starts just kicking ass and just beating the living daylights out to everyone. And then he gets into it with, and Austin's one of these guys who basically he would work with such intensity and ferocity that even though he, a lot of the time he was just basically kicking and punching and stuff like that, he's still, his matches were just awesome to watch. And there's a really long extended moment at the end of a match where him and Rock basically face off and start beating the hell out of each other. And those two work really well together because a lot of time punching and kicking matches really bore me when, you know, when sort of see people like Randy Orton or Sheamus do these kind of, or John Cena even sometimes, you know, they just bore the hell out of me. These two I could watch for hours just beating the living daylights. We just had so much chemistry and we just basically put so much work into it when they were basically do, you know, work together. And it was just like this awesome confrontation between the two. This is in the Royal Rumble and it's, and they're sort of working as if they're working the main event at WrestleMania. And it was just, and obviously Austin in the end wins. It comes down to his and Kane, and he basically dispatches Kane with quite a few, chair shots to the head because you could do that back then. And it's just an incredible, it's basically everything that you loved about Steve Austin, just a complete and utter no fear badass. When they try to, and the thing is as well, it's one of these things that, and you could say this with The Rock as well. I think with a lot of sort of baby faces nowadays, why the sort of, a lot of them don't get over is because they pander too much to the crowd. It's too obvious that they, well, Roman Reigns, for example, everything that he does, you can tell they're trying to come up with ways to make the crowd like him and play off the crowd. And they're just never going to accept him. Whereas with people like Rock and Austin, they just did what they did and fans reacted to them. You know, character wise, those guys couldn't give a shit whether or not the crowds cheered them or not. They just came out and just did their thing. And this is why I think the crowds really, really sort of like, you know, respected that because they felt that they were basically cheering them because they liked them and not because we were being programmed to. And I think a lot of the sort of wrestling booking today could take a leaf from that. But it's really funny as well because you could see everything that Austin did and how great he was, you know, and how over he was with the crowd. And this was only a few months before they actually made the decision to turn him heel, which, you know, which was one of those really bizarre things that they did. But it was just, to me, it's just like when I watched it today, and it was just so refreshing to see, you know, just, you know, this is what an actual babyface should be. You know, just sort of total kick-ass, no nonsense. And not only that, but basically gets the job done. And this was that, you know, he sort of at the end of the match, he's there bleeding and everything. He's won the match. And it's just like a, you know, to me, it's one of the great performances in the Royal Rumble.
Yep. All right. Speaking of, performances in the Royal Rumble, my number three moment is going to be AJ Styles making his WWE debut in last year's Royal Rumble. This is a spot that where, you know, everyone been kind of teased whether or not AJ Styles, people know he was in talks with WWE, that eventually one day he may come, but he was still sort of that, you know, will they or won't they kind of moment where, you know, wasn't sure if it'd be nice and it'd be awesome if it happened at the Rumble, but nobody was 100% sure. He was still, you know, halfway in, halfway out with New Japan and his bookings and Ring of Honor and various indies around the country. So people had wondered. It's like, okay, WWE is obviously interested. John Cena was obviously, he posted a picture of him on his Instagram. So you kind of knew he was on WWE's radar, but you didn't know when and you didn't know where he was going to make his debut. And, and, you know, obviously it was a great moment, but it was sort of spoiled by, I guess, because whatever reason why, but they had a different crew, filming this year's Rumbles. So as great as AJ was in this year's Rumble last year's Rumble making his debut and everybody lost their minds, there was an instance where the first couple of seconds of his music playing and they show Roman Reigns' reaction in the ring and it's really awkward because it's like, okay, why are we looking at Roman Reigns when presumably the next Royal Rumble participant is supposed to be making his way down the ramp? And obviously the moment they show AJ is then everybody loses their mind. But there was this great little scene where they showed it for the live audience. Because that's the only way we could see it, but we saw they did the moment where they showed on the Titantron, the giant A show up on the Titantron, and then giant J showing up on the Titantron, and everybody flipping out. That was a great little moment. Obviously, we can't go back and pretend like that's the way it happened, but it's one of those things where they planned on something certainly to happen. It didn't come out the way it did, but with that said, you know, when you're talking about top Royal Rumble moments, I feel like I'd be doing myself a disservice if I left it off this list, so that's why I got to put it at number 3. Top Royal Rumble moments of all time.
Yeah, and not only that, but they had him in the Rumble for most of it. I think, didn't he go an hour, something like that? He was in there a long time, so they really managed to give him, like, you know, a really, really great debut. Because it was one of these things when I'm watching it, where I'm thinking, I would not put it past them to basically have him in there and have this great reaction and then have him eliminated after 5 minutes. Because it's just the sort of stupid thing that they sort of do to sort of, oh, you're in here now, but you've got to, you've got to learn to work our style and you've got to work to, like they did with Kenta when he first came in. They did this great documentary that they were filming him with his first WrestleMania in a battle royale. And then they had him eliminated, like, one of the first 5 guys to be eliminated. So I was kind of like nervous that they would do something like really stupid, like that, like a, you know, we're going to show all you TNA fans sort of thing. But yeah, I think it was a really good, way to get the guy in.
Yeah. And it's one of those exciting moments. You kind of hope that against all odds that maybe they'd find a way to have AJ win the Rumble. And wouldn't that be another historical fact that a guy who made his debut in the WWE on his very first night, on his very first Royal Rumble, wins the Royal Rumble and headlines WrestleMania? But that was too much to ask for. And you know, this one instance where obviously you always want more, but in this one instance, I was willing to be a lot more forgiving. They had AJ be in the Rumble. He was in there for a considerable amount of time. The plan wasn't for AJ to win, but at the same time, they gave him enough to where, you know, even though he lost the Royal Rumble match, it really didn't hurt him all that much. So that's my number 3 moment. All right, let's move on to number 2. Dazza, what's your number 2 moment?
Okay, my number 2 moment, is way back in the 1990 Royal Rumble. Ooh. And I have to admit, I was a lot younger, but I wasn't that young. I was still in my sort of late teens. And it was a bit that I really, really marked out for. And it's the bit in the Royal Rumble where the Warrior, the Ultimate Warrior and Hogan squared off. And this, I cannot express what a big deal this was at the time. Because Hogan and Warrior was, I mean, Hogan was obviously like really big, but so was Warrior. And this was, I believe this was the first time that they'd actually been in the ring at the same time or even appeared. Cause they were the two big stars, even though Hogan was the big star, was the guy coming through. And it's something different between now and then, because nowadays wrestlers wrestle each other constantly. So when they actually sort of come to feud for the same time or sort of, there's nothing really special about it. Whereas back in the sort of the late 80s, early 90s, basically, there were lots of wrestlers who if there were two wrestlers were going to start feuding or like, you know, confrontation for the first time, it was always fun to see what they looked like stood next to each other. You know, because you'd never, chances are, you'd never see them in, you know, like that. Nowadays, you know, you constantly sort of see them together in tag matches and stuff like that. Hogan and Warrior, I don't think I'd even though we're like the two top stars, I don't think they'd ever tagged or even been sort of seen in the same sort of shot at any one time. And this was it was just this great moment where they basically, Hogan's already in the Rumble. And Warrior comes in and they basically keep away from each other. They don't even know each other. They just sort of fight. They're sort of the guys they're fighting. And then they eliminate the, I think, Hogan had Honky Tonk Man. Warrior had, Rick Martel, and they both eliminate their guys at the same time. And then they stood in opposite corners and the crowd just goes ballistic. And remember Jesse Ventura on commentaries going, look at this, look at this. And then they both just sort of turn and stare at each other across the ring. And it's like, oh my God, we're going to, you know, finally see these two. And then the only thing that resulted out of it was we just did a few spots where we just basically sort of did like shoulder charges. And then they both hit each other with a clothesline and went down at the same time. But it was just that sort of, it was that dream moment that I think is sort of missing nowadays in wrestling, that just sort of like that wonderful, you know, or, you know, incredible moment of excitement. And of course, it's sort of this built later on down the line to WrestleMania 6 it was, where they basically had this sort of a big match, which again was a match that basically really caught people's attention. I mean, I remember people who were not massively wrestling fans, but wanted to, when I was, you know, they would be getting in touch with me wanting to know who won or what was happening with the match and everything, because it basically caught people's imagination because they were two massive cartoon characters at the time. But this moment in the Rumble was one of my favorites. And some people, I think some people will try to make out the too cool for school or too hardcore wrestling fans would say that they basically, you know, saw through the whole facade and knew it wasn't, you know, they basically sort of weren't touched by it. But, you know, I think at the time, if you were a wrestling fan and you weren't touched by that moment, and like excited by that moment, even both of weren't great rare, because just the fact the two of them both big, messy personalities, you know, about to face off, it was just, you know, to me, it was really the kind of thing that, you know, that you watch the Royal Rumble for, and I thought it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, sort of a modern equivalent, obviously, it's far less significant, but, I think, was it for last year's Survivor Series, there was a plan, you know, Braun Strowman was going to be on the Raw team and Baron Corbin was going to be on the SmackDown team, and they took out Baron Corbin at the last minute because they wanted to save that confrontation spot for this year's Rumble. It's like, wow. I mean, it's sort of an equivalent, I guess a modern equivalent to what you were talking about earlier, but, you know, you go from Hogan and Warrior to Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin. Standards have certainly fallen, Dazza.
Yeah. I mean, I do actually wonder about the, back in the day, the Hogan Warrior, if how long they'd actually sort of planned to actually sort of, if they actually planned for a long time that they were going to have these two have a match one day, because they seem to keep them so far apart from each other. You know, they, like I said, they never really sort of, you never saw them, you know, and in those days, you didn't really see a lot of wrestlers interact. If you weren't feuding with another wrestler, you didn't really see them interacting much. It wasn't like, you know, like nowadays where you would, you know, where you've got like a proper weekly TV show where they sort of run into each other. But, you know, even for two wrestlers who were such big names, you never saw them actually sort of, you know, into that. So I wonder if he actually had a reason when, from Warrior coming in, how, if they sort of had a thing that, you know, one day this guy's going to wrestle, you know, Hulk Hogan. Cause this was the first time that you actually saw them square up. So, but yeah, it was a, you know, a great moment.
All right. My number two moment. Obviously, since we're already in the '90s, let's not stray too far from there. You mentioned earlier on your list, Dazza, the 1992 Rumble where Hogan helped eliminate Sid from outside the ring. And my number two moment, which is, I guess, going to take a lot of people by surprise, but was, of course, Ric Flair winning the 1992 Royal Rumble. Obviously, people had not, you know, considering how Flair had come out so early, you know, you go back and watch that match, you have the reactions from Bobby saying this isn't fair to Flair, that he's so early in the Rumble, it's not really fair to him that he has to go out there and potentially lose his quote-unquote world title in a match like this, but you know, it's one of these things. It's a legendary performance. He went out there and at the time had a great, you know, great outings, lasted so long in the ring. And, you know, it's one of these instances where the Royal, I think nothing's ever really going to top as far as in Royal Rumble matches itself. Just the idea that Ric Flair going that long time and, you know, managing to win the Royal Rumble at all costs. One of these things is like very rarely do you want your heel, your villain to be seen as heroic against battling all odds. But, you know, this is sort of the exception, sort of, you know, it's sort of explaining just how great Ric Flair is. The idea that he goes out there and wins the 92 Rumble, wins the WWF title. It's, you know, when people think of great Royal Rumble moments, it's very high on the list, if not number one. But for me, in my instance, I have to be a contrarian. I have to put that in my number two spot. I think I probably blew your spot, right, Dazza? Now that we're going into number one, is that your number one?
It is indeed my number one spot. And I just thought this was incredible because it was really unlike WWF at the time to basically put over a heel like this, mm-hmm. you know, because they basically had him come in at number three. And you're right, it's sort of Bobby Heenan's, because at the time Bobby Heenan was the, it wasn't quite a manager of Ric Flair, but he was some sort of like a advisor of such. And he was purely, and he basically claimed that he didn't know what number Ric Flair had. And as soon as he comes out, you just hear Heenan just shouted, "Damn it. Damn it." Mm-hmm. And then you hear, and Gorilla Monsoon, he says a line where he just says, "Oh, you can kiss it goodbye, Brain." And because at that point, the guys who were basically came in, in the first 10 were never there at the end. And I think that's the point that Monsoon ends. And it was just being tight. You know, you had this great performance where sort of like, you know, Bobby Heenan on commentary is just absolutely screaming every time Ric Flair looks like he's going to get eliminated and everything. And Flair's performance that night, because he worked his arse off. He was basically taking bumps constantly. He was basically chopping. And you see, he basically looked, you know, there was sweat pouring from him. He looked exhausted at times, even though he was acting exhausted, because Ric Flair, he's done hours, you know, long before. But he was putting everything into it to make him look like he was having the fight of his life. And there's so many sort of really subtle moments he does. There's a bit where he sort of, I think he's like the last guy in the ring. He's managed to clear the ring, and then the buzzer goes, and it's Roddy Piper, who is feuding with him at the time, comes running out. And the look on Flair's face, he just has this kind of like a, oh God, no, not Piper. This like exhausted look. And he was basically on for the entire match. Just absolutely incredible. And I think pretty much every wrestler who were basically in that Royal Rumble at one point sort of like, you know, beat the heck out of Flair or sort of did something with him. And I remember at the time the Undertaker was doing like the Unstoppable gimmick. There's a bit in the match where Flair just sort of like, you know, squares up to him and just goes for him with the chops and everything. And his entire performance was just, it was just everything that you expected from Ric Flair at the time. And it was just so great that the WWF actually allowed him to basically show what he could do. And then you also had afterwards the promo that he cuts, where you basically got where the thing where they're pretending that there's Gene Oakland's pretending that there's a whole sort of entourage of press where he's telling the press to put that cigarette out and everything and that. And Flair does this promo where he sort of says something like, "I'm going to tell you all with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment of my life." And he's saying now he took it to the Warrior, took it to Savage, took it to Hogan, took it to The Undertaker. And he's just sort of like, you know, and it's just, it's like a Muhammad Ali sort of like, promo. And it's just everything that Flair did in that thing, the performance, the promo and everything. It was almost like the performance of someone who they were basically trying to make into a babyface. They just put him over so strong. And he basically, it was just like, you know, and absolutely, you know, for me, not just one of the great moments in the Royal Rumble history, but to me, it's one of the great moments in anything that WWE, WWF, whatever has ever done. I think it's absolutely a phenomenal, phenomenal, match in Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And for me, I'll agree this is a great historical moment. And
hold on, let me guess. Is it Bushwhackerloo? being eliminated in like 2 seconds.
No, I'm certainly not going to go with a parody. I'm not going to go with a wacky, you know, kind of an offshoot. But for me, my number one moment is really, you know, I mentioned that was the best. If I didn't mention it before, I'm going to mention it now, that Ric Flair winning the Rumble is probably what most people consider when they think of the Royal Rumble. And, when I put my list together, that's gotta be the top Royal Rumble match itself spot. There's nothing really that tops that. But for me, as far as my personal taste in pro wrestling is concerned, I'm going to have to go with number one being, a match that took place outside of the, Royal Rumble match. It was a WWE Championship title defense. It was Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit in the 2007 Royal Rumble event. People often cite, obviously, you know, when they think of great matches, they'll often go with the, you know, the moniker 5 stars, and you know they gravitate towards the Dave Meltzer approach to rating a match. And obviously, this is pro wrestling. It's you know, a bit of an art form. It's the idea that, you know, whatever you consider great, maybe another person doesn't. It's all subjective. There's no really way to be objective when it comes to a really great match. But for me, this is the standard bearer for a 5-star match. I don't know if you've seen this match, Dazza, but really, I've gone back and watched this match several times, 3, 4, 5 times now, and it gets better every single time. One of the great hallmarks of the match that I noticed when I first started watching it was, you look at the front row, there's this, like, I guess this is, I don't know if she's a mother or just, you know, this woman, and she's there with her son, and the idea is she's sort of just there to, you know, with her son, because she wants to take him out, and he's obviously a fan of pro wrestling, and she's there just because, you know, someone has to watch the kid, and the idea is that she's watching this pro wrestling match, and, you know, she's just there for the kid, so she's not really invested in the match. But you watch her face as the match goes on, and Benoit and Angle keep going over the top with all these spots, all these teases of finish, Angle going for his ankle lock, Benoit going for his crossface, and you see just the way the crowd's reacting to it, and you see the reactions on her face. It's just absolutely priceless. This woman who probably never would have considered herself a pro wrestling fan, or probably would have never watched it outside of, you know, sort of being dragged to it. She's getting emotionally invested in this match, and if you go back and listen to the commentary, even Michael Cole is putting over the match, and really, Michael Cole is really someone who is, I guess, historically, before he made his way into the WWE, probably wasn't really a big fan, and that's usually how they tend to hire. And the idea that even Michael Cole is freaking out and marking out for this match, even exclaiming, you know, forget whoever wins the Royal Rumble and you know, who winds up being the WWE champion, this should be the main event at WrestleMania. This is the main event, because it was so good, and everybody was just absolutely going berserk. And when I think of the Royal Rumble, that's usually one of the first things I think of. Obviously, I think of the match itself. Obviously, I mentioned earlier my number two moment and your number one moment with Ric Flair winning the Royal Rumble, winning the WWF title, at the time setting the record at an hour. But for me, as far as my personal Royal Rumble experience, there's nothing that really can top that one singles match. I think even for a while, for those of you who are sort of, I guess, historical buffs, going into that WrestleMania 19 in 2003, there was the idea that Angle was in and out, sort of iffy, and they were thinking about putting Chris Benoit in the match, and just because he was just so highly thought of, because he went out there and had that absolutely spectacular 5-star, you know, match of the year contender out with Kurt Angle. If you haven't already, I recommend that you go, if you're already subscribed to the network, or if you know, you have some other nefarious ways to watch, I recommend that you go out of your way to watch that, because, you know, it's not just Royal Rumble moments, but just great wrestling moments. It for me, it's, you know, the standard bearer for a great match, one of the best matches of all time. You know, people often say 5 stars, what's your standard bearer, or what do you consider a 5-star match? Obviously, it's always subjective, but for me, that tops the list. That is the bar that must be met for me to consider a 5-star match.
Yeah, this was actually, for a long time, probably my favorite match. Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely, you know, for the drama, the actual, I mean, the execution of it, but more than it just being a great match of sort of like moves and everything, it just told a great story and sort of like, you know, with passion and everything. And just sort of, it was, to me, it's one of those like perfect matches. And, I've not watched it in years because after obviously, you know, what happened, I've never actually basically sought out to watch a Chris Benoit match. I'm not, you know, I realize that some people watch them and everything. If I'm watching like a, like say, Like when I first got the WWE Network, I went through and watched all the Clash of the Champions, and I would watch some Nitros and some old sort of like, you know, old sort of WCW shows. If he's on those shows, I don't turn off. I'll still watch them because they're just part of the show. But to actually sort of go out my way to actually watch a Chris Benoit match, it's just not something that I sort of could really enjoy the same way. And before that, this was basically one of, you know, for a time was my favorite match, certainly my favorite WWF match. You know, I thought it was just absolutely, you know, absolutely phenomenal. One of those matches where it almost seemed real. I'm not saying that I thought it was real, but just everything that did just seemed, legitimate and just nothing. It just seemed like an all business match. So I understand why it's number one on your list, because it was, you know, just an absolutely, phenomenal match.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously you could sort of to do a degree take, you know, as far as the Royal Rumble match itself, obviously nothing could really top Ric Flair winning the 92 Rumble, beating all these legendary pro wrestlers and winning the WWF title. Obviously, in the Royal Rumble match itself, but because you gave me the parameters that I could go outside of in matches that took place outside of the confines of the Royal Rumble match. And for me, to me, that's the standard bearer. Obviously, there's other matches that people think of consideration, you know, when they're thinking five stars. But for me, that's the standard bearer. You mentioned earlier, that's your favorite WWE match, or at least was for a considerable while. And, you know, when you think of great matches, it's like it's certainly on there. Even if you don't think it's, you know, certainly five stars or one of the best matches of all time, it's certainly one of these matches that you go out there and it's, you're absolutely floored. To me, the thing that really makes it is just Michael Cole, because usually often he'll be in, you know, calling a match and he'll maybe get a little invested in it. Sometimes he'll bust out the vintage whatever to kind of, you know, to get over the fact that this is, you know, it's a heightened experience. This is not just your average standard championship match. Obviously he's certainly invested into it, but when he mentioned earlier, this could be the main event of WrestleMania. I'm like, yeah, this is a really good match. And I don't know for a fact, but often people cite how sometimes Michael Cole is just a mouthpiece for Vince McMahon. So the idea that even, you know, I can't prove it, but the idea that even Vince thought the match was really, you know, it really tore the house down, really is a bonfire of a match. It's like, okay. That's a certainly fantastic match, and when I think of the Royal Rumble event itself, that's the reason why I put it my number one.
Yeah. I've never had a problem with Michael Cole. I know a lot of people sort of like, you know, don't like his a commentator, but and I think he's not like a classic wrestling commentator, because he basically came into this from like the news media and he didn't have a sort of like an emotional attachment to it. But I've always thought he did a fine job. Personally, you know, apart from when he was doing the heel persona, that really would take me out of shows. But generally speaking, I think as a commentator, I think he's a decent one. I think there's been a lot of bad commentators from the years, but he's not one of them. I thought he's always managed to put a degree of sort of passion into the actual, you know, and sort of as, you know, and legitimacy of some sort. You know, got over, you know, when something was meant to be dramatic and stuff. But yeah, I always thought it was fine as a commentator personally.
Yeah.
I think in a way, you mentioned it sort of this match, you know, could have been the main event of WrestleMania. I think in a way it was, it was better that it wasn't. Because WrestleMania, when you get to the main event, unless you've got something really, really hot, because it's such a long show and everything, I often find that it's really hard to get the crowd invested in the main event. Because mm-hmm. they've seen so much already, and it's a long show and everything. And a match like that was a match that had a sort of like a build to it and a degree of subtlety and investment that I think it was better on a Royal Rumble show, coming halfway through the show and also being sort of like, you know, given time to actually basically be a, you know, a proper match. So I think in a way, I think the Royal Rumble was the perfect spot for it. Because it's a massive show, but at the same time, it's not sort of at a show where basically you're going to get like a beaten up audience. I think that would sort of, I think that was better for it, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I can certainly see where you're coming from. Obviously, you know, I think this match was sort of thrown together with the idea of that they're going to go out there and put a great match. It's obviously, it's the Royal Rumble. It's one of the biggest shows of the year. I didn't think they were planning on it being that good, or they didn't have any foresight and they're like, oh, you know, they can go out there and have this great a match. Had they known it would have been so great, I think they would have maybe called an audible because, you know, it was such a great match, but. You know, it made sense, the idea of, you know, that their main event initially was going to be Lesnar versus Angle. And, you know, that made sense on paper. But once you finally saw the match itself and, you know, you really hate to see a rematch, you know, something they'd done earlier or even a three-way. So I understand why they went in the direction they did. But, you know, in hindsight, and, you know, you could do that with everything. But, you know, had they known how great this match would have been, it would have certainly been great if it was at, you know, the headlining WrestleMania. People would have talked about this for years as one of the best matches of all time. The fact that it was on the Royal Rumble sort of, it's a lesser platform. Obviously, you could argue if it's the number two platform in WWE, number three maybe. But I feel like this... I feel like it would have been better had been at Mania, but, you know, with that said, Royal Rumble, still a gigantic platform. Obviously, the fact that you even know of the match as well, it's like, okay, this match isn't a secret then. It's not like something that, you know, I know people know Angle's really good, Benoit's really good. They've had several matches over the ages, over the years, and they've been really good. But the idea, it's like, okay, what makes this match particularly better than all the rest? But if you go back and watch it, it's certainly one of the best matches. And it's the, in my opinion, it's the best Royal Rumble match, and arguably one of the best matches of all time in wrestling history. All right, Deza, I think that's going to do it for this week's show, where I think we're looking at steadily approaching 90 minutes again. I remember we talked off air. We were like, oh, okay, well, we'll play it by ear, see if we're gonna do this and then a traditional show on top of it. But no, we found yet again, we did another specialty show where we... We didn't plan for it to take up the whole, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours, but that's what wound up happening.
Brevity is not our strong point. Let's face it.
Hey, it's certainly fine with me because you know what? Last week we did 2005. It's 2017, Dazza. We're running out of years to do Rate and Slate.
Yeah, I've got 10 weeks to come up with something new to replace it, so...
Well, in the meantime, we can do another specialty show. I know you mentioned earlier in the idea that somewhere in the pipeline you had the idea of doing specialty shows, so that could give you some.
Well, we need to do our James Bond one because that's one we've been teasing for a long time. So we need to get that sorted at some point.
Yeah, well, that's something that I think we should tease because, you know, I think we should put it off for just a little bit longer because the idea of Hello, Dazza, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening.
Sorry about that. I think I was adjusting my hardware here, and I think I missed something. What were you going to say just a second ago?
Nothing. Oh, okay. I was listening to what you were saying.
Well, I'm hoping there'll be a new James Bond film that comes out pretty soon, so we have sort of some context to be doing a top James Bond film. But, you know, we can only put it out for so long because it's like you're a big fan of James Bond. I'm a big fan of James Bond. I like the idea of us doing, you know, our favorite movies. So we can only put it out for so long, Dazza. That's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.
Enjoy the Rumble.
Or enjoy. I hope the Royal Rumble was great.
Oh, yes.
You keep forgetting.